departure. Have a good flight.
The Christopher Gabriel program begins now.
This is your 50,000-watt sports leader in Fresno, the Central Valley, and for NFL fans who played the very special three-way parlay of a coin toss, a non-pass interference call, and an offsides call, helping decide two conference championship football games. More on all that coming up. Your three-hour tour begins right now, 6 minutes, 10 seconds. Past the hour of 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'm the host of the program, Christopher Gabriel. Just now started to catch my breath from Championship Sunday. How about you? And good afternoon to you. I hope you are having a great day wherever you happen to be listening to us. Gorgeous day here in the Central Valley. The technical director of the program, producer, hockey guy, he's a Sharks fan, Giants fan. He's an expert on many reality television shows, including The Bachelorette and The Bachelor, Russ. Keeping this program going in the right direction. On the program today, just a couple of guests for you. Bottom of the hour, Tony D. We'll talk a little of this, a little of that, and throw in a splash of NFL Sunday. And then Cam Worrell joins me at 4:05 with a cannonball's worth of NFL talk. Top five at 5, about 5:05. Winners and losers. I had a definite winner, and I had a definite loser. Plus a little bit of additional winners and losers audio coming up for you. 5:35, I'd love to hear from you. It's NFL therapy. You know, we had Bulldogs therapy all Fresno State Bulldogs football season. Would love to have you jump aboard for some NFL therapy. Send me, bring me, talk to me. Share your love, your anger, your joys, your frustrations, or for that matter, regarding the NFL, why you can't stand the NFL. One person, one of our listeners, or our loyal listeners, Brian, saying that he couldn't care less about the National Football League. Couldn't care less. He's a Raiders fan, but he said he couldn't care less, which you know very well could be the fact that the Raiders haven't given him a reason to be concerned. Got a very interesting tweet from Chris a little while ago. Chris weighing in, asking what to do, Central Valley Raider, asking what me and several other people think that the Raiders should do for their final season of home games. I will share that a little bit later on. Well, my goodness, what a day it was in the National Football League yesterday. Where do we begin? Where do we even begin to start breaking all of what we saw down? I mean, because my goodness, there was so much. Do we talk about the officiating? Do we talk about the singular no call in the Rams Saints game? In that moment. And I emphasize the word singular. In that singular moment, it changed the direction of who was going to the Super Bowl. The totality of the game, I mean, there was 58 minutes and 13 seconds had already been played in the game, so you can't negate or ignore what led up to that play. But we'll break all that down for you. We'll break that down together. What about the overtime coin toss? How do we feel about that? You can look at this at the second game and say, well, there's the problem with it. There's the problem with the coin toss. One team gets the ball. They win the toss. The Patriots win it. And the Chiefs never see the ball. The other game, the first game, Saints win the coin toss, throw an interception. I have some thoughts about that. And my thoughts about the overtime, about NFL overtime, have never changed. So I'll share my thoughts about that. Play calling, Sean Payton. I think there were a number of instances in the Saints-Rams game that you have to question some of the play calling with Sean Payton. What about the Patriots' defense? Shutting out the Chiefs in the first half. First time this year that the Chiefs have been shut out in the first half. Then we have Tom Brady, we have Jared Goff, Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees. Of the four great leaders on those teams, which one, and this will point up one reason why, even though we'll share statistics on this program, and we do it all the time, I'm more story-driven than statistics-driven, and this is one really good example. Between the four quarterbacks, and you probably see where this is going already, which quarterback had the worst day statistically? Who would you think it would be? Just off the top of your head, who would you think it would be? If you guessed Tom Brady, you're right. He had the worst quarterback rating of any of the four quarterbacks. But who performed the biggest when it mattered most? I don't think it's even arguable. It's Tom Brady. What about the offsides penalty in the Patriots-Chiefs game? I mean, you can look at that play. If you are in the group that says one play, that believes that one play can make or break a game, meaning nothing else that happens before or after a particular play affects a game, it's just that, you know, that one play, that offsides penalty, he's never going to get over that. I mean, that they get the interception, it's game over. And then it's not game over. Or how about the fact that both road teams won? I mean, that in and of itself, you don't see that happen that often. Last time that happened, I believe it was 2012, when the Baltimore Ravens won in New England, San Francisco 49ers won in Atlanta, and then the Ravens went on to win the Super Bowl. We can talk about after going back to the Saints game, after the non-call, the non-defensive pass interference call. What about the Saints defense? Can we talk about the Saints defense? Because they didn't show up. Rams marched right down the field. I mean, albeit it was about 45 yards, but they marched down the field, and they got the field goal, and they went to overtime. I mean, you can look at it that way as well. There's so many different ways you can look at this. You can say the Saints were even fortunate to get to overtime, because you'll recall Jared Goff found a wide open Robert Woods. Had Woods not stumbled, the pass wasn't perfect, but it was good enough that Robert Woods could have caught it in stride, but he stumbled. It looked like he caught his toe, or maybe the front of his foot on the turf, and he stumbled. Had Woods not stumbled, it's game over. Or it would have been all but game over. He scores. Nobody's stopping him. What about with the Rams? When the Rams had it fourth and goal from the one, it was the Rams and Sean McVay that spent, I'm not going to say they spent all week telling us about what a tremendous physical power football team they are, along with the fact that they have a creative and innovative passing offense, obviously. I mean, everybody wants to have the new Sean McVay, do they not? You either want to have an offensive coordinator like a Sean McVay, or you want to have a head coach like a Sean McVay. You want to have a young, aggressive, talented, dynamic guy on the sidelines. But he spent time, and rightfully so, telling us what a physically efficient and dominating football team his Los Angeles Rams are. And why not? They ran for 273 against the Cowboys. Said they, I'm paraphrasing now, they take pride in how they can pound a team. They can pound a team with their physicality. So they're down three with 5:16 to go, and the physically efficient and hard-charging, and we will pound you, rushing team, along with the passing, Los Angeles Rams, had fourth and goal from the one, and they line up for a field goal. I'm not sure what Sean McVay was saying there. Now, granted, they got a delay of game penalty. It moved it back. And so they try the field goal, obviously. But with 5:16 to go in the game, you're down three, and you are the Los Angeles Rams. And the way that game had gone and the fact that the flow of the game, that sort of the ebb and flow of the game, started to really favor the Rams, why wouldn't you go for it right there? Why wouldn't you show confidence in your team that you're going to win right there, that you can do it right there? Didn't matter in the end because they won. How about the muffed punt by Julian Edelman? Now, whether it did or it didn't touch Edelman, someone in the building called it the Matrix. It was perfect. That's a perfect, you know, the slow motion, and I managed not to see. I'm not going to touch the ball. And I thought the point that and I'm not sure. It might have been Tony Romo. I've got a lot to say about Tony Romo. All positive. I'm not sure if it was Romo or Nance. I feel like it was Romo who said that had Edelman actually touched it, his reaction would have been much different. He would have turned and he would have run. Then again, let's call it what it is. Edelman is a seasoned pro. Maybe he tried to sell it. Regardless of whether he did or didn't touch it, did you watching at home, watching on your deck in the back with 30 people and you're all munching, you know, guacamole and tacos and tri-tip, or you're in a bar somewhere, when you saw that play and then you saw the multiple replays, were you convinced there was conclusive evidence to turn it over? Because I was not. I was not. I love the Matrix explanation. What about the phantom roughing the passer call? Chris Jones hits Brady in the shoulder. I'm where that flag came from. My conclusion about that is that the referee, where he threw the flag from, saw the swing, the arm swing, come down, and it looked to him like it probably hit Brady in the helmet as his arm went by, and he called it. I mean, I can cut a referee a break that way. I mean, why not? Because when you saw the replay, he wasn't near his head. His arm came down on his shoulder. He was probably 6 or 7 inches away from his head. And I mean, now does that get thrown into the mix? Does that get thrown into the mix with yet another play that should be reviewable? Because that was not a roughing the passer call. Not even close. And then you look at the offensive play disparity between New England and Kansas City. You look at 93 plays for New England. 93 plays for New England. Kansas City had 47 plays, which is reminiscent of New England and Atlanta in the Super Bowl when New England ran 94 plays and Falcons had 47. I'm always going to give you the plus and the minus, the good and the bad. But this is what I said about how I viewed what the Patriots would do. The Patriots on offense, how I viewed it when I was talking to Keon Myers from ESPN Central Texas. This was my take. If the temperature is low and Belichick, him and his staff aren't going to miss anything. If they have to run the ball 30 or 40 or 50 straight times, if they believe that establishing a ground game is going to be the way to beat the Chiefs and keep Mahomes and that offense, that explosive offense off the field, you and I both know Belichick will do that. Patriots ran the ball 48 times. It's exactly what they did. That was clearly the game plan. The Patriots, again, Belichick is just so good. I don't care if you don't like him. I didn't have a rooting interest in either game. Were there teams that I wanted to win? Yeah, I wanted the Chiefs to win. I wanted the Rams to win. Would I have cared if the Patriots, or in this case the Patriots did win, or the Saints win? No, not at all. You know, it's fun to sit back sometimes and watch games when you don't have a rooting interest. But there was, I don't think there was any question that between, you know, between everything that was in play with this game and considering how incredibly explosive Kansas City's offense has been practically from their first preseason game, that even with the great Tom Brady at quarterback, Belichick knows better than anyone how to scheme and game plan to win. There's just nobody better. And even so, running the ball 48 times, I mean, how over and over and over, how many times did the Patriots kill the Chiefs on those little screens into the flat? Those little 7 or 8 yard screens, and they just killed them with that play. To the left, to the right, all game long. Where was the defensive adjustment from the Kansas City Chiefs? I never saw it. I never saw it. But with the 48 rush attempts, with the little flare screens, the little screens out to the flat, and the occasional deep ball, it was brilliant all the way around from Bill Belichick, and it just shouldn't surprise you. And so when you look ahead to, you know, less than 2 weeks from now, the Super Bowl 53, one of the storylines that comes immediately to mind for me is, can Sean McVay match wits with Bill Belichick? We'll be talking about that over the next couple of weeks and the next couple of hours as well. Glad you're hanging out with us. If you want to weigh in at any time today, you can. 844-940-3776. Talking some football right now. This is the CGP.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll talk with our good friend Tony D. Tony D, Bulldog Hour, Monday through Thursday, 2 to 3, right before me. And then on Fridays, you get Tony for 2 hours. Tony is 2 to 4, and I have the pleasure of joining... Well, Tony joins me on the program on Mondays. I join him on his program on Wednesdays, and then we have Friday emails from 3 to 4. We talk about the good ones, the curious ones, and the outright questionable ones. With all the ones, all the folks that email Tony, it is a prolific amount of people, and we tackle those emails. We usually get to one, maybe two, because we just babble on forever. You know, conventional wisdom said that under Drew Brees, the Saints don't lose in the dome. Really, it's not even conventional wisdom; it's by the numbers. They are 6-0. They were 6-0 in playoff games there, and they played 10 home playoff games in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. They hadn't lost one, and this is a deceiving stat because it's not like, I mean, they played 10 games, but the last time they had lost in the Superdome was January 3rd in 1993. That was when the Eagles were playing the Saints. It was a wild card game, and the Eagles scored 26 points in under 9 minutes in the fourth quarter, taking out the Saints. It's still a record. A fourth quarter record, 36-20, they won that game. And then, you know, boy, the crowds, how great were the crowds? Chiefs have historically had the loudest crowd in the National Football League. Seahawks Stadium is obviously very loud. Superdome is deafening. U.S. Bank Stadium, where the Vikings play, that's loud. Ford Field, I don't know if it's really loud or not. I've been there. I've not been there for a game, but their fans just don't bring it. You can have a stadium that's going to produce great sound, but if the fans don't bring the noise, then it doesn't really matter. You had two places that were rocking. Folks were saying that the Superdome, that the press box there was literally shaking. I've been in press boxes that have been shaking, and it's a little bit of a different feeling than being in an earthquake. But you get the same feeling. You know, when you're in an earthquake, and I was in one that was 6.1 down in the Los Angeles area, I wasn't at the epicenter, but it's enough to give you chills, because you don't know if something's coming down in the house, something's coming through the window or what have you, or in your apartment building or wherever you happen to be. You're in a press box, you're at the top of the stadium, and you start feeling that shaking, and you assume that structurally it's sound, but still, it is a bit of a disconcerting feeling. But As I said, the last time both road teams won, 2012, which gave us the Baltimore-New England Super Bowl. But one of the things we'll talk about going forward today, certainly, among many things that we're going to talk about, and it's, pardon the sort of pun here, is flip a coin. We're going to talk about the officiating or the coin toss for overtime. And maybe because Cam, being that he was a safety, he was a defensive back, maybe we'll save more of that for Cam. Look, I am just so vehemently opposed to the way the National Football League rolls out overtime. To me, it's just ridiculous, and I've said this long before yesterday. It's ridiculous. The fact that you have two teams working their tails off, they're out there. This game is for the Super Bowl, but it could be week one. And you're going to allow a coin toss to essentially negate one team's ability, potentially, to have a chance to win a game if the other team scores on a touchdown. And I had a friend in another part of the country saying, well, no, this is just another version of sudden death. It's a dumb version of sudden death is what it is. I've heard people equate it to hockey, which is ridiculous. Hockey, for sudden death overtime, you have a face-off at center ice with both teams having an equal shot to get the puck first. And I think I don't have the number in front of me, but if you go back and look at the history of Stanley Cup, of playoff overtime in hockey, and for that matter, you can roll in the regular season as well, what you're going to find is a number somewhere in the 97 or 98% range. It might even be a little higher than that. Of overtime, of sudden death overtime games in the NHL ending on the team that wins the faceoff and scoring on their first rush up ice. As somebody who has followed hockey for 50 years and been to I don't know how many games, easily over 1,000. I'm just telling you that kind of parallel is ridiculous. It's just it's reckless and it's just dumb. But the National Football League, the fact that they believe a coin toss works, and then you have people who are refuting it saying, well, look at the Saints game. Well, the fact that the Saints won the toss and didn't win the game, it's a false equivalency to say, you see, overtime works. They made a defensive play. They got an interception. At the end of the day, it's about how it's set up structurally. There's a couple of different ways they could do overtime. One would be coin toss. Team wins the coin toss. Team takes the ball. And they go down and they score a touchdown. They kick off. The team receiving it needs to score a touchdown as well. And if they do, then after that, it's all bets off. It's sudden death. It is sudden death overtime after that. Somebody might say, well, why shouldn't we just keep alternating? No, because the first team scored, kicked the extra point, second team scored. They had an option of going for two. And their percentage of their chance of winning, that percentage goes down, but the chance is there. They were given a fair chance. Then you alternate after that. Or a team gets a field goal on the first try. Then the other team gets the ball. Maybe they get a field goal. Maybe they win the game on a touchdown. But here is the parallel that I would offer you. For those of you who are in the camp who believe that the NFL overtime system is a good one, I'll give you a parallel. And before I give it to you, I'll say this. I'm also not a fan of how college does it. I'm not a fan of doing something that is artificial, giving a team the ball at the 25-yard line. Not a fan of that either. I would rather see them say, we're going to give each team one possession. And I'm not saying this is what I would favor as the end plan, but I'd rather see them say, we're going to do a coin toss. One team gets the ball. Next team gets the ball. If it's not decided, it's going to end in a tie. I would have no problem with that, or at least play a full quarter. And that would be one option for the NFL as well. Play a full quarter. Play one full quarter. Play it out. But the parallel for me in terms of how ridiculous the National Football League's overtime system is this. Dodgers are playing the Giants. Dodgers are in town at now named Oracle Park. Game is tied. Game goes to extra innings. Dodgers being the road team, Dodgers come to bat in the top of the 10th. First guy up in the lineup hits a home run, and the game is over. Game's over. Well, they scored. They scored first. They scored. Now, anybody who follows baseball understands that's ridiculous. Well, wait a minute. They're the visiting team. They got a home run, or maybe they scored one or three or five, or who knows? Home team's got to have a chance to bat, right? Why shouldn't the team that loses the coin toss in an overtime game in the National Football League, why shouldn't they be given one shot if that team scores a touchdown? You simply cannot convince me on this one that this is a good system. How many people around the country that didn't have a rooting interest? And again, I did not have a rooting interest. I'm not a Patriots backer or hater. But how many people around the country would have just loved after Brady had that great drive, took him right down the field, they go in and score, to see this young superstar quarterback who's got an amazing career ahead of him, to watch him go up against Belichick and the Patriots defense at home, crowd roaring, with one drive with a chance to tie it or maybe win it on a two-point conversion. You're at home, maybe Andy Reid goes for two. How great would that drama have been? It was exciting to watch the Patriots take it down the field, but it would have been even better to at least see Kansas City have one shot. One shot. And then after that, we go sudden death. We'll be talking more about this as the afternoon goes along. Coming up next, we're going to be talking with our good friend Tony Diodato. We call him Tony D. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
Look, there's a time limit, if you want to look at it that way, on NFL games. That they don't want these games to turn into marathons. But when you have the greatest young quarterback to come into the league in a long time standing or sitting on the bench and not giving him a chance, reverse the situation for a moment. Imagine the Chiefs win the toss. The Chiefs go down the field. They score a touchdown. Patriot haters around the country are saying, great, now those are the rules. But I think probably the outcry among fans without a rooting interest, one way or the other, look at it and would have said, how do you not give the greatest franchise, at least in the modern era of football, the greatest coach ever, arguably the greatest quarterback ever, how do you not give him a chance to at least have the ball in his hands for the opportunity to tie or win? Let's bring in our good friend Tony D. Tony, how are you, my friend?
I am just fine, CG. How are you?
I'm doing well. I want to just go ahead and continue my monologue here by turning this into a discussion. You've been watching the NFL for a long time. I have said for years that I am not a fan of how the National Football League does overtime. I'm not convinced that the college rule is any better, except in one sense, that at least both teams get a shot. Tony, should the National Football League look to change this rule?
Yes, and I'm glad you brought it up, CG, because several years ago, you know this well, the NFL had replay, and they mismanaged it so bad they junked it for a while, if you recall. Then they came back with the new and improved version several years ago, which has stuck. But I had a league official on, and there were three things that we brought up with him at the time. One was that you had to have replay cover things that are subjective because our premise was everything is subjective. If you're trying to figure out if somebody's had a reception, that's subjective, right? So one guy says, well, the ball hit the ground. The other guy says, hey, you know what? He controlled it, all that kind of, particularly if they've changed the rules now so that you can let the tip of the ball hit the ground. That was the first thing that we brought up. We said, you have to do that. You have to have challenges for everything. And immediately they said, well, we don't want to do that because, like you said, it'll delay the game too long. Our response was, well, if you're only going to have three challenges, how in hell is that going to delay the game? It's the same thing, right? It takes just as long to figure out if the guy's in bounds or out of bounds. That was the first thing. The other two things we had issue with dealt with overtime. One was we felt a coin flip was ridiculous. It would be better to find anything. Say the home team has to tee it up from 45 yards to attempt an uncontested field goal. If he makes it, you get the ball when you want it. If not, you don't. So it's not a coin flip. And the third thing was the thing you're talking about, which was you have to give both teams the ball. And I'll tell you what the rejoinder was. I said, well, no, if you do that, then how do you determine possession? Let's say on the opening kick of overtime, the ball is fumbled and the other team picks it up and they go 5 yards on the return and they fumble it. What do you say then? I say both teams had the ball.
Exactly.
That's what I
yes.
say. I mean, so there's nothing confusing if you can rule if somebody had possession. I don't care if it was in the opening kick that the other club fumbled it and you fumbled it back. That's still possession. And then, like you said, once that takes place, next score wins. That way, and I heard what you said, and you are 1,000,000% correct. When the Patriots were down the field, never mind that prior to that, if Ford doesn't line up, and that was really heinous, by the way, because he had no effect on the play. I said at the 2 o'clock hour, he could have been on the sideline, and it would have been the same thing.
Right.
He had no effect on the play. He didn't jump offside. You know, sometimes if you see somebody jump offside and they get to the quarterback too early because they jumped off, and then the quarterback throws an INT, you say, hey, well, you know what? The guy was in the backfield. No, in this case, he was a non-factor, but he was in the neutral zone. Okay, you take that play away, the game is different. But when you got to overtime, I'm right with you. When New England scored, at that point, KC has to get the football. One time, they've got to get the football. If New England went for two and they were up eight, then they know at best KC can catch them. If not, they win. If they went for one, like you said, maybe if Mahomes comes down the field, you go for two, or maybe you kick the extra point. Either way, Christopher, you had at least closure that you don't have now. And I couldn't agree with you more, and I don't know why they don't change the pass interference rule and why they don't change that rule about you must have one possession each. I just don't get it.
Well, I'm right there with you. I know that one of the – we're visiting with Tony D, as we do every Monday at 3:35. One of the arguments against this has been – and I think this is a tremendously weak and hollow argument. It's the Chiefs had plenty of chances to win the game in regulation. Don't blame the coin. No. If the game ends in a tie in regulation, then we push off the game and we are essentially, Tony, in a new game. We're in a new set of rules where the paradigm has shifted. Forget how many times the Chiefs had to win, because, you know, the Patriots had just as many times to win. We have to turn that page and go into a new chapter. And when you go into a new chapter, you simply must give the other team a chance to win the football game. The argument, and I used this in the first half hour, was I had one fan come to me saying, well, look at the Saints. Saints got the ball first, and it didn't work for them. That's right. It didn't work for them. But even so, that's not the issue. The fact that Drew Brees threw an interception and then the Rams got the ball, forget all that. The point is the rule itself, Tony, should be structured in a way that it's fair once we get to the new area that we're in overtime, just like when you get to sudden death in hockey, just like when you have the extra time in soccer, you know, if the game is tied before, you know, in regulation. It's essentially a new game. Everybody needs to be able to touch the ball. Why in this era, for that matter, why in this era of a team sport? It is a team sport. Teams win or lose games on offense and on defense. Why would you simply let a game, Tony, come down to one team's offense versus the other team's defense and not allow that to reverse and see how it goes on the second possession?
Well, look, there is, in my opinion, no argument against what you're saying. And what you brought up about the college is very true. I don't like and have never cared for the scrimmage aspect of the college game. And I've seen guys in the college game, by the way, pick up a fumble, get all the way down to the two-yard line and be knocked down, and all of a sudden it meant nothing. They've got to go back and re-scrimmage
again, right?
Hey, and I understand what they're trying to do, and particularly when they start at the 25, that's a 42-yard field goal. You're already in field goal range. But equally absurd, or maybe more absurd, was the fact that for all those years in the NFL, we played overtime, that first score wins, and people were winning on field goals, for goodness sake. You know, I mean, it's something, Christopher, that doesn't take extra time. This is my point about challenges that encompass everything. A challenge is a challenge. You got three of them, let them use them. Let them use them with less than 2 minutes to go if they want to, if they've got them in their pocket. And you know what? If they used them all up, so be it. Tough luck.
Right.
Yesterday would have been a great example. If, for instance, New Orleans would have used all their challenges, I don't want the booth to bail you out in the last 2 minutes. If the booth wants to check scoring plays or possession plays all the time, that's fine. But at the end of that game, if you had the third challenge in your pocket, use it. If not, tough beans to New Orleans. Too bad. You should have kept it. The same thing about this stuff about possessions. It is easy to adjudicate possession. You get one each. If you fumble it away, tough stuff. The other team gets it and beats you. And that's the thing about the New Orleans game. What people don't realize when they try to use that as a counter, that in reality backs up your argument. The Saints did get the ball one time. They did get it, and the Rams got it once. But later that night, New England only got it. Mahomes never did, and what was crazy, I think it was Steratore is in the booth for CBS. He said when the overtime started, he told Jim Nance and Nostradamus himself, Tony Romo, who really was pretty amazing in that game.
Remarkable.
He told them, this is essentially a new game. Because, of course, in the regular season, we play 10 minutes. This full complement of timeouts, 15 minutes, we're going to keep on playing until somebody wins, right? So if that's the case, then why in the world don't you say, like you're bringing up, CG, let's go ahead and say both teams are going to get the ball. Now, look, New England may have won anyway. I mean, Mahomes
has a lot of
pressure on him. You're going to have to go downfield, and New England had the advantage of knowing they are going to have to defend the goal line only. They don't have to worry about a field goal. Still, if you ask Pat Mahomes, he would tell you, given the fact we had the highest scoring fourth quarter in the history of playoff football in the National Football League, that he kind of liked his chances, okay?
And I said this right before you came on, as dramatic as it was to watch the Patriots get the ball and watch this fantastic drive, albeit against a defense that was gassed. In fact, let me just stop myself right there and say, what happens if you're the team that has had the defense on the field? Maybe you just suffered through, and it's your fault, you couldn't stop them, but you just suffered through a 16-play, 90-yard drive, and then you lose the coin toss, and your defense is back out there again. That is really, that to me is excessively unfair for one team, which brings me back to where I was going with this. You have Tom Brady have this magnificent drive. It was a beautiful drive to watch with the deep ball to Gronk, and then they eventually run it in. But wouldn't you want to see, I mean, how much more drama could we ask for knowing that the most explosive offense in football, the greatest young star in the NFL in Patrick Mahomes, the guy who threw 50 touchdown passes, he gets one shot to go up against the 8-time Super Bowl attendees, 5-time champion Patriots. That would have been, there would have been 80,000 people on their feet. We all would have been on our feet at home watching this. That is made for excitement TV for the National Football League, and instead they do this nonsense of giving the ball one time, game over.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly it. You know, we had that email last week that, oddly enough, we didn't get to. There's a stutter. That said, football is a TV game, a national TV game. And so, yeah, it was really something seeing the crowds in both New Orleans and at Arrowhead. Those are, you know, two of the great venues and great fan bases. And really, you know, hearts go out to both of those fan bases because those were terrible losses to suffer, right? But again, one more time, and I said it earlier, I'll say it again. one, the Rams' fault. It is not fair to blame the Rams
right.
for what the officials did.
That's right.
They missed other stuff. But you know what? Even if that was the decider, and of course it was going to give New Orleans a chance just to run it down and kick a chippy, but the Rams didn't cheat, okay? They didn't run 13 guys out there when nobody's looking, okay? The officials blew it. It happens. Kansas City, maybe more tough to take because your own player made a mistake that killed you. But just for the game itself, like you said, don't have a horse in the race. You just want to see a great football game. It was a shame that it didn't end more dramatically with Mahomes getting a shot. Like you said, the converse would be true as well. If Mahomes got it first and went down, then Brady should have gotten it back. And I come back to what I said to you at the start of this conversation, CG. They have to find a better way to determine possession. If you're only going to give it to one team to start and you're not going to guarantee the other, then you better have something like the home team kicks an uncontested field goal. You know, in basketball, it would be winners outs, right? Make it and
right,
take it.
Right.
Something more than toss of the coin. Let's line them up from 40 yards, okay? Well within the range of the home team's kicker and say, uncontested, we're going to snap it, spot it, kick it. You put it through, you get the ball first. You don't, the others. Wouldn't that be more fair than tossing a coin in the air?
Right now,
it's crazy.
The coin
you
toss.
You determine a whole season
yeah.
on it. You
yes.
have determined the AFC champion on the basis of a coin toss.
We might as well have the referee out there doing rock, paper, scissors.
You know what?
You know, I mean, because that's
Uno due. We could start. We could be like a couple of old Italian guys.
Yes.
All right, back yes. there, you put a one out and I put a two. Okay, that kind of thing.
Pull out
right.
the dartboard. Okay, Vinny's going to come in off the sideline and throw the friggin' dart. One more segment with Tony D coming
he
up.
Got your dart right here, Vinny. There you go.
I wasn't going to go there, but I'm good with that.
Well, I didn't mean it to come out like
of,
that.
Of course. Okay. Now we're going to go to Mulberry and Hess in New York City and talk a Little Italy. I'm talking with Tony D. One more segment coming up as we do Godfather references from now until 6 p.m. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
Another couple of minutes with our very good friend Tony D. Tony joins me Mondays 3:35. I join him on Wednesdays at 2:35, and then we hang out together for Friday emails. Tony, sources telling me you have an email to share.
I've got an email from Ron the Bear. You could tell what this is going to reference. He said, this is just for CG. Tony's idea about how you get possession in overtime is perfect, but just make it you have to hit it upright. That way the Bears will always get possession in overtime. So
he just won the Internet.
Is that what he did?
That he
with
did.
Every Bears fan, yeah.
Yeah,
there you go.
Because most Bears fans, you know, either his idea, which I love, or just overtime should be whenever the Chicago Bears are in a game, give them the ball first because it won't matter.
Is that what it is?
It won't matter.
I think if you hit the upright, it ought to count like 5, and a double doink ought to be like 8. I think that's
the rule
they want.
If they asked Parkey to do 50 straight kicks, he wouldn't hit the damn upright one time. But put him in a game situation, and there you go. He's hitting the upright. I told you, at that day, the only thing that shocked me was that Parkey didn't hit the upright, the crossbar, and the other upright.
The old triple doink. And how about, you know, the commercial? I've forgotten what beer company has the commercial that has it kissing off the upright, and that happened to play right after Parkey did that. And of course, that commercial was put in the log a long time ago.
I thought that was a Buffalo Wild Wings commercial.
Maybe it was Buffalo Wild
where
Wings.
That's what it was. But I want to ask you really quickly. I want to get a
which is like a beer commercial coming.
It might as well be.
Here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
We've got about a minute left. I just want to get a quick minute from you on Russell Westbrook. Why does Russell Westbrook have an issue with seemingly somebody on every single team in the NBA? Always ending with him saying either just go home, man, to a player or an official. He reminds me of the way people, quote-unquote, loved Barry Bonds during his career.
In a way, yes. The other thing is, I think, and this is close to home with you, Michael Jordan, if he didn't have an enemy, he would invent one. And evidently, again, Russell's fuel is his anger.
Yeah.
Without it, he evidently cannot get himself motivated, but he sure is great at getting motivated by inventing it. And also Paul George playing alongside and gives him a little bit of leeway to get upset because Paul, who had 31 today, has been absolutely brilliant all year.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I mean, listen, I love watching Russell Westbrook play because every time he takes it to the hole, you know, or at least there's a good chance something incredible and amazing and explosive is going to happen. The post-game interviews, he always seems like he's irritated, angry, and just, come on, Russell, give us something better.
That's the South Central in him right there.
I guess,
trust me. He grew up tough. He grew up with a chip on his shoulder, and also like to have him on my team as long as he lets somebody else shoot it in the clutch.
I don't know. You know what? Maurice Cheeks grew up on the west side of Chicago, neighborhood, and he wasn't anything like it. Tony D., you make sure you listen to him Monday through Thursday, 2 to 3, and then on Fridays, 2 to 4. We hang out together plenty of times, probably more times than anybody cares. Tony, thanks, my friend. We'll see you Wednesday.
You got it, CG. Take care, my friend.
All right, coming up, the hard-hitting safety out of Chowchilla, our guy Cam Worrell. More Super Bowl talk, more conference championship talk. This is the CGP.
The studios of 940 ESPN in Fresno, California. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
Hour number two, CGP, begins right now, 5 minutes 32 seconds past the hour of 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Glad to have you aboard the Monday 3-hour tour. Heavily dominated by what unfolded in front of our eyes yesterday at the Superdome, Rams and Saints. Rams come away with the win, and then we go to Arrowhead Stadium and we watch the Chiefs and the Patriots. The Patriots come away with that one. Both games won by the road team. Both games go to overtime. Both games loaded with amazing plays individually, remarkable drives, and a healthy dose of controversy. Here to help set us straight, it's our guy.
He was a hard-hitting defensive back for Fresno State, the Chicago Bears, and the Miami Dolphins. And if you look at him wrong, he might just blindside you. Here's Cam Worrell.
He is indeed the hard-hitting safety out of Chowchilla and Fresno State and the Chicago Bears. Brief stop in Miami. We say hello to our friend Cam Worrell. Cam, how are you?
CG, what's going on?
Well, I'm going to tell you how my early afternoon, late morning, early afternoon rolled out, because it rolls right into you perfectly. I am watching the Saints, Saints-Rams game, as I'm sure you are, correct? I mean, you're watching that. You're watching the game, all right? And watching this game, and then we had the play. I mean, we had the play. And when I watched that play, I'm going to tell you, because I had my laptop in front of me in my office at home, the very first thing that I did was immediately go from my Twitter to yours. Because I thought, all right, defensive guys stick together, you know, just like right? Offensive guys stick together.
Yep.
Defensive guys stick together. But beyond that, I know Cam Worrell to be an absolutely honest, measured guy who calls it like it is, and I thought, there is no way on God's green earth that Cam is going to say that was a legal play, and he didn't.
Right.
Cam, I don't even know how we come into this part of our discussion today, except I'll just give you my thought. There was a frame of camera, a video that was frozen that showed the referee exactly the fact that he was, you know, you saw him seeing the play, and yet somehow when they had the loop report afterwards, he was saying that no, he didn't see the play. Where do you begin with this? Where would you begin with this, trying to rectify this problem?
Man, well, you know, if I'm the head official, I might say I didn't see it either, because that means I'm out of it, okay? This is not my decision. This is not my responsibility to make that call. So I would probably say the same thing. Whether I saw it or not, I would defer to the official whose responsibility it was to make that call. You know, I think we all feel that we would like games to be decided, especially games that get teams to the Super Bowl, games that win championships. You like that to be decided on the field. I think we all can agree mm-hmm. with that. But when there's something that egregious, that's as blatant of a pass interference that you will ever see. It's textbook. I got beat. I'm going to make sure this receiver doesn't catch the ball. I'm going to take the penalty instead of giving up a touchdown. And that's what Roby Coleman said he did. You can't let that play go. That affected the outcome of the NFC Championship. And that was blatant. When it's that blatant, when it is purposeful, you have to throw the flag. You have no choice as an official but to enforce that rule. That was not gray area. That was black and white. You have to throw that penalty because, you know, the Saints did some things to themselves. But at the end of all that, that was a third down pass where their receiver was interfered with. They should have had a first down. They should have had the ability to run out the clock and have a field goal attempt to win the NFC Championship. That's how that game should have gone. So there's a bunch of stuff they did wrong. Throwing the ball on first down and not completing it was one of the biggest ones, but still they had put themselves in that position. And to lose it like that, I can't even imagine, honestly. It's got to be something that these Saints players may never get over that. You may never get over the fact that you were in that position to go to the Super Bowl and that was taken away from you. I don't know how. I'm not a good enough person to get over that. I don't know how these Saints players have the ability to do that.
I put this out on Twitter a little bit earlier today to sort of, and this will, in a way, illuminate what you're saying, and that is, if you're a Saints player and most of this roster was there last year, how do you not only get over what happened yesterday, but last year on the heels of what happened with Stephon Diggs and the miracle in Minneapolis? I don't think this is hyperbole. I really looked around today in the years that I've been following professional sports and college sports. I can't come up with a team that has, yes, Buffalo lost 4 Super Bowls, the Vikings have lost 4 Super Bowls, but in terms of back-to-back, absolutely gut-wrenching, heart-wrenching, just rip your every organ out of your chest loss. Cam, I can't think of another team that's had back-to-back playoff losses the way the Saints have last year in Minneapolis, yesterday in New Orleans.
Yeah, those are two games that you are in the perfect position to win, and you don't, and it happens, you know, back-to-back. You know, losing 4 Super Bowls in a row, obviously, I think, you know, we all understand how just gut-wrenching that is, 4 years in a row, and how difficult that would be to process. But, you know, you lose on a fluke kind of Hail Mary play where you have a DB in perfect position to make a play, and then you what appears to be like the most egregious pass interference call that can be made doesn't get made, or the most justified pass interference call that should be made doesn't get made, and you're going home for a second year in a row after losing the way that they did last year. I can't think of any, you know, examples of that, of teams losing in that specific instance, you know, being in position to win and having one play knock you out of an opportunity to win a Super Bowl. It's, you know, the Saints did a great job this year coming back after that loss last year.
Yes.
And I felt like they used that as motivation. And to get this one kind of taken away from you, I don't know if the Saints can ever recover from this. You know, Drew Brees might retire in a couple of years. They may never get back to this point. Sean Payton may move on from the Saints. And this could be a play that defines the future of the Saints organization. That's the type of loss this could turn into if things go, you know, the way they could go with an aging Drew Brees and a Sean Payton that's been there for, you know, 11 or 12 years. You know, they may never return with this current regime to have that type of an opportunity again.
My guest, as always, 4:05 on Mondays, is Cam Worrell. All right, if everything that we have laid out is not bad enough, let me throw this into the mix. I'm guessing a lot of folks listening right now have not seen the very short back and forth. It's a standard pool report. You, of course, know what those are. Folks, a pool report is the league will send out the referee and one reporter, in this case, Amy Just from NOLA.com, N-O-L-A, from the Times Picayune, she was the pool reporter. The NFL sent out the referee from the Saints-Rams game, Bill Vinovich, to do a quick interview on this. And all I need to do, it's very short, is read you how this played out. And if I'm a Saints player, or if I'm Sean Payton, I'm even more livid, considering that Sean Payton was on the phone with the league office, and the league said, yep, we blew it. We blew it. Here you go. Question from the pool reporter, Amy Just. What was the reasoning for no penalty flag being thrown on the play involving Drew Brees' pass attempt to Tommy Lee Lewis? Parentheses. Defended by Nickell Roby-Coleman with 1:49 to play. Bill Vinovich says, it's a judgment call by the officials, and then here's your operative part. I personally have not seen the play. Question, did the timing in the game have any impact on a no call there? Vinovich, absolutely not. Question, you said you didn't see the play, correct? He says, correct. She says, you can go back and look at that. You can't go back and look at that. He says, you're talking about instant replay? She says, yes. He says, it's not a reviewable play. We don't need any of the rest of that. All we need, Cam, is the very first question and Bill's answer. I personally have not seen the play. All right, Cam, you played in the National Football League for 6 years. How in the world, and I should preface this by saying I'm not asking you to defend the league, more probably the other way around. How in the world, Cam, does the league send out the head official for the pool report, and he's not taken 90 seconds, 45 seconds, 30 seconds to watch the play that is being talked about globally? He didn't have time to look at it. How does the league do that?
Well, I think this is kind of a microcosm of, you know, the frustration that, you know, players, coaches, fans hold towards, you know, officials not being held accountable for the mistakes that they make during a game. Bill Vinovich was the head official in the NFC Championship game. If you're going to send him out to answer a question about what he knows is going to be the question involving that play, he needs to call the league office. He needs to call whoever he needs to talk to get a statement as to what do I say when this question is asked, because it's going to be asked. And that's the frustration, right? We don't get a real answer. The league told Sean Payton they blew the call. I don't think the NFL, I haven't been paying attention today, I don't think they came out officially and said, yeah, we blew that call, which is what they told Sean Payton on the phone. The lack of communication with the front office of the NFL, with Bill Vinovich, it's disgusting. It's disgusting to fans. If you're a Saints fan, if you're a Saints player, as you said, if you're Sean Payton, that's what you're going to come out here and say you haven't seen the play. It's your responsibility to answer for that call. You're the head official. And for him to come out and even attempt to, you know, kind of get by not taking any responsibility. Everybody understood he didn't make the call. It wasn't his call to make. But as the head official, you have to have an answer for that question. And that's
absolutely
one of the more frustrating things for fans, for players, for coaches, that nobody's held responsible. Nobody is accountable to the public. Nobody says, yeah, we screwed up. We made a mistake. But you have to have that. You have to have some accountability, because otherwise, you know, people think that officials, sure, they get graded, but they don't have to take the public lashing that players and coaches take when they make a mistake on the field. And that is what, you know, the most frustrating thing is for players and coaches. We get lambasted on TV when we make a mistake. These officials do, but they don't have to stand in front of a camera and answer questions.
Cam, you're absolutely right about everything you said. And I would add this. If you're Bill Vinovich, And the league office, whomever it is in the league office, has contacted Bill on the red phone, you know, in the officials' lounge in there. And, Bill, we're going to have to send you out. You're going to do the pool report. You're going to be talking with Amy Just from NOLA.com. Is Bill going out there? And when Amy asks that question, is Bill thinking, oh, I didn't expect that question. Didn't think that was coming. Don't you think, I mean, I'm being, you know, a little facetious there, obviously, but in all seriousness, don't you think, Cam, the first thing that Bill Vinovich should be doing is, all right, before I go out to tell Amy, hold on a second, I need to see their play on replay. I need to see that because that will be most likely her first or second question. I don't have a credible answer right now because he can't, Cam, out of 100 things that he could say, 100 of them cannot be, I personally have not seen the play.
Yeah, yes, 100%. And I think Alberto Riveron is the vice president, senior vice president of officiating. So I think he's the top voice when it comes to officials in the NFL. And, you know, he's probably the one that needs to answer that question. Bill Vinovich, if he's going to go out, as you said, he needs to speak to Alberto Riveron. They need to figure out, hey, you go watch this play. You know, this is what happened, whatever it may be, but you need to – you need to have an answer. You need to watch this. You need to give an explanation as to why this was not called. And to just come out and say, oh, I haven't seen it, it's a cop-out. It's a complete cop-out. And Bill Vinovich, if he's going to go out and speak for that officiating crew, he needs to take responsibility for the events that took place. To not, as I said, it's a cop-out. And, you know, players don't get the cop-out. Coaches don't get the cop-out. Sean Payton had to stand up in front of that camera. Drew Brees had to stand in front of the camera. Everybody involved in that game had to stand up there and answer questions, and Bill Vinovich got to skate by. It's not the way it should be. They need to do a better job. And, look, I don't want to bring up the Tuck rule because Raiders fans are still upset about it, but it changed the rules, right?
Yes,
it changed the rules in the NFL. This is something that is going to change the rules in the NFL as well. Pass interference will probably be reviewable, but you're going to have a clear communication chain of command when it comes to after-game events and speaking to officials, because this was not good enough. This was a complete cop-out by the league, by Bill Vinovich, by the head of officials, Alberto Riveron. For them to put someone out there to make that statement, it was an embarrassment to everybody involved in that football game yesterday.
Yeah, embarrassment is the perfect word. We're talking with our good friend Cam Morrell. Of course, Cam, sideline reporter for Fresno State football games, does a tremendous job on the team with the voice of the Bulldogs, Paul Leffler, and the coach, Pat Hill. More with Cam coming up. We're going to be talking about I have a couple of things I want to ask him about Sean Payton's play calling, and certainly we're going to talk about the other game, which had just as much craziness going on. But we're going to get into some of the weeds of the games as well. Glad you're joining us. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
We're talking with Cam Morrell. Break it down. Two football games yesterday. We don't have time to break down every single nuance. I'd love to do that, but we'll try to hit some of the high points and or the low points. I'm looking into the mind of Sean McVay, and what's interesting to me is this dichotomy of two moments in the game that makes me wonder, is he going to be able to match wits with Bill Belichick in 2 weeks? And the two plays are, I thought that the game was very early on, I think we all thought that the game was getting away from the Rams, and they needed to do something, and it's fourth and five, they're on their own 30, it's early in the second quarter, I mean, they're on their own 30, and he calls a fake punt, and they pull it off, and it's the kind of play that I love to see, and it's a play that shows great confidence in your team, and you know, and eventually there was a 13-10 at the half, and even though New Orleans scored first in the second half, I think it really changed the vibe of where Los Angeles was at. But at the other end of that, here's what I don't get. You have the Rams a little bit later, a lot later in the game, It's fourth and goal from the one. They, and I mentioned this in the first 20 minutes, Cam, they did a lot of time talking this past week, and understandably so, about what a physically dominating football team they are, an efficient team physically. They get the job done. They ran for 273 against the Cowboys. Even though we're a dynamic, exciting, explosive team through the air, we will pound you physically. It's fourth and goal from the one. They're down three, and they line up for a field goal. So those two put up against each other. Can you try to get into his mind and explain that to me? Because there was 5 minutes, there was 5:16 to go. I just didn't get. If you're going to go for the fake field goal from your 30, why not go for it right there? Show the confidence in your offense and just, you know, give it to one of your backs, one of your big backs, and take it in.
Yeah, it wasn't even at the one. It was inside the one. C.J. Anderson was well inside the one-yard line. You have a 6'5 quarterback, and you have a physical offensive line. You have a Saints defensive line missing Sheldon Rankins, who was a big piece of that interior of the defensive line. I was shocked, honestly shocked, that Sean McVay kicked the field goal. And I get it in this respect. You're down three. The Saints very well could have gotten that ball inside the one if he didn't score and kept the ball for the rest of the game. That's a possibility, sure. But, you know, you're inside the one-yard line. You have a chance to go to the Super Bowl if you punch that thing in and New Orleans doesn't get in the end zone, you know, then to take a lead again. If you put seven on the board, you know, the Saints have to score a touchdown. So I was shocked. I was very surprised. You know, the only thing I can say is, you know, Sean McVay said, look, there's 5 minutes left. I'm at least going to give my team an opportunity, you know, with a tied game to try to get to the Super Bowl. You know, but it's totally against everything that he's done. You know, he talked about the fake punt at his own 30. I mean, it wasn't just a fake punt. It was a fake punt where their punter stood up and threw a hitch route to a DB, to Sam Shields, who's a DB. And Sam Shields had to make a guy miss to pick up that first down. I mean, a very high-risk play. And then, you know, you decide to kick a field goal inside the one. I was shocked. I can't imagine that if faced with that same opportunity with Tom Brady on the other side of the field, that Sean McVay kicked the field goal in the Super Bowl. And I think, you know, if he really, you know, thinks about that call, that he probably would have done that differently, because he really got lucky that Drew Brees missed, you know, a pass on first down that, I mean, Drew Brees is the all-time leader in completion percentage in NFL history. Set a new record this year for completion percentage in the season. That slant to Michael Thomas he can do that in his sleep. He could probably make that with his left hand, and he misses low on first down. You know, obviously the pass interference non-call affected it, but, you know, the Saints, for all intents and purposes, should have been able to run a ton of clock off. If they get a first down, that game is all but over. Sean McVay got lucky that the Rams even had an opportunity to come back and kick a field goal to tie it up. I would imagine, and I would hope, that if he's faced with that same decision in the Super Bowl, he's going to try to punch that thing in from the one.
I concur with everything you're saying. Coming up, more with Cam, we're going to talk about the AFC, and there was just as many great plays and questionable calls and controversy in this game as well. Nobody better to break it down than my good friend Cam Worrell. That's coming up next on the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
Here's a note that I just got. This is interesting. I think Cam may have gotten this as well. The official, the lead official in the Saints-Rams game, Bill Vinovich. He's also a college basketball official, and go figure, he was the referee, one of the referees at the Nevada-Fresno State game at Save Mart Center a few weeks ago. How about that, Cam?
It's pretty interesting, right? I had no idea he was also a college basketball official. And hey, Rams fans, Saints fans, I think you should come out to every Fresno State home basketball game this year, because you may have an opportunity to boo Bill Vinovich in person. I mean, unfortunately, that's just the nature of how it goes. But, yeah, that's kind of surprising that he was in the Save Mart Center this year, and then he was, you know, in front of the, you know, one of the, I mean, that call will go down or non-call will go down in history as, you know, one that will be talked about probably for the rest of the history of the NFL.
There's no doubt about that at all. I want to move over to the other game, and I'll start it with a stat that shows why far too often we shouldn't pay attention to stats. In fact, you know, departing offensive coordinator Kalen DeBoer, boy, we're going to miss him. I'll have some more about him a little bit later on, but he always said that, you know, stats don't always tell the story. You've said that as well. The four quarterbacks on Sunday, but in terms of the actual NFL quarterback rating, who was the least effective in terms of that number? None other than Tom Brady. And yet, who was it that in the game's most crucial moment comes through leading his team right down the field with a couple of great passes en route? It's Tom Brady. You know, this New England Patriots team, I realize that I'm going a little cliche, but as many would say, to be the man, you have to beat the man. And boy, with Tom Brady and with Bill Belichick, but more maybe of equal importance, Cam, and I said this to you last week, we tend to forget how many other pieces there are on this New England team. And to beat them, it is much more than stopping Tom Brady.
Yeah, it's trying to stop, you know, Brian Flores and Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman and now Sony Michel and James White. You know, I've said it for a while, but Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time. The dominance that the Patriots, you know, have shown over the last 18 years and counting, it's incredible. It will never be done again in the NFL. The NFL is literally built to have parity. And every year, you know, you see 40-60% new teams in the playoffs, and the one constant is the Patriots, and it's because they're smarter than everybody else. That's it, period. They're smarter than everybody else. Tom Brady's greatest quarterback of all time. I don't think you can argue that anymore, but you know, Julian Edelman was a quarterback in high school or in college. Quarterback. Now he's the number one receiver for the New England Patriots. You know, Rob Gronkowski is the shell of the Rob Gronkowski that was at the top of the league just a few years ago. You know, Sony Michel is a rookie. James White is a pass-catching running back only. I mean, literally, if he's on the field, it's a pass. If Sony Michel's on the field, it's a run.
Yeah.
You know, like, those are the type of things that they do, and yet they continue to exploit matchups, and they do it better than anybody that I've ever seen. You know what's coming, but, you know, you have to make the adjustment. You have to pass off coverage. You have to send extra help, and the Patriots are literally the best. Tom Brady is so good at understanding how the play that is called is going to be defended, and he goes where the weakness is. And it's Bill Belichick who really has done that his entire career. I'm going to take away your strength. I'm going to exploit your weakness, and I'm going to win football games doing that. It's masterful to watch. I know people like to hate on the Patriots. I root against the Patriots. I like to see the Patriots lose. But watching them, it's watching Beethoven. It's watching an all-time great perform at the highest level. It's truly, you know, we'll go down as some of the most, you know, well-executed, smart, efficient football that has ever been played.
I love that you made that point, and you made it in that way. Folks, we're talking with Cam Worrell, as we always do every Monday. I love that you made it that way, because we were talking here at the station a little bit earlier today, before it went to air. And the point that I made, I think you made it far more eloquently, is that when fans get past their hatred, if you want to use that word, for the Patriots, for the Yankees when they're in their heyday, right now, for the Golden State Warriors, you know, when you go past teams, Duke for that matter, you have to get past that. Get past the emotion that you have against a particular team for whatever reason you have it, and you have to give that team their due. And when you look at this Patriots team, And again, I'm not a hater. I'm not a supporter. I didn't care who won that game. I was rooting for Kansas City. Now the Patriots are in the Super Bowl. Great. Bring it on. It's going to be a lot of fun. But what stuck out to me yesterday was this has not been a great year for Gronkowski. You go back to the regular season game that they play, that amazing 43-40 game with the Chiefs. Fourth quarter, who was it that Brady went to for critical fourth quarter passes that were catches? He went to Gronk. And that ultimately set up the touchdown that led to the that led them to the 37-33 lead. Ultimately, they win 43-40. Who was it that he went to in the key moments yesterday? Again, it was Gronk in the fourth quarter and in overtime. And you can never overstate the importance of having that one guy, irrespective of all the other guys that you mentioned that are just tremendously talented, starting with Michelle. You can never overstate how much it is. You mentioned Jordan and Pippen. Even with the changing parts that they had Horace Grant on the first three-peat, they had Dennis Rodman on the second three-peat, they had John Paxson, they had Steve Kerr, and so on. But it was always Jordan with Pippen. It's been Brady with Gronk for quite a while. And I wasn't thinking about it at the time. But, Cam, of course he was going to go to Gronk in the game's most crucial situations because that's the guy that he trusts, and he knows that Gronk is going to make the play.
Right, and if not, you're going down swinging. You're going down trying to get the ball to your best player. And it's crazy. The Patriots came out. They came out too tight, fullback. I mean, they ran smash mouth football to open that game yesterday. But crunch time, the ball is going to be in Tom Brady's hands, and he's going to get it to Rob Gronkowski, or he's going to get it to Julian Edelman. But what's so impressive about, especially what Gronk did, Gronk's a tight end. He used to be a split out wide. We will exploit this matchup all day if you don't double him. He's not really that guy anymore. He can't really run the way that he used to. He's an excellent blocker, but he's still that guy. If you need a play, you can get one. The Patriots don't have a receiver. They don't really have a number one receiver. Gronk was the guy for a while. They don't have a receiver that can work outside the numbers. Edelman's an inside guy, so it's even more impressive what they do offensively without that real number one receiver. But you knew, man, I don't know if people paid attention to Tony Romo's broadcast yesterday. It was awesome. It was such a brilliant broadcast. He basically called out everything the Patriots were doing. But he said, look, crunch time, Gronk's got to split out wide. You got to go to your guy. That's exactly what Tom Brady did. It's exactly why they're playing in the Super Bowl again. And the Chiefs, I think they'll be back there next year, but that's why the Chiefs are at home right now. Tom Brady took advantage, and they were able to make the plays, and the Chiefs just didn't. They had opportunities to get off the field in overtime and just could not get it done.
I wrote on Twitter yesterday, I said, I admittedly was not in the Tony Romo camp at first, and it's because I had heard one game. And I said, I needed to take my own advice, and it's just like when you start a new radio program. People are going to be critical of you. They don't like you. You're not like the previous guy or gal, what have you. And I thought, I need to listen to more of Tony Romo before I make a snap judgment on just one game. He has got me totally in the Romo box now. What I love about him when he's doing a game is, first of all, his insights and his analysis and his commentary are spot on. They're just so solid. The point of view you're getting from him is that of a guy who led a team. And I think for me, part of my reluctance to like him was because he was a Cowboy, but I had to get past that. But beyond the fact that his insights and analysis and commentary are so good, what I like about him is when he's sitting up there with Jim Nantz, he's us. He's the guy at home. He's the guy in the bar. His emotion, he reminds me of a younger Madden. He's getting, oh, Jim, this is going to be great. I'm like, that's what I'm saying to my daughters at home. And he's so relatable that, and he's the diametric opposite of Chris Collinsworth. And that's not a knock on Collinsworth. I know that a lot of people don't like him because he comes off, he is very smug, and he can be very arrogant. What Tony Romo does is he doesn't talk down to us. He talks with us, and that is a palpable difference, Cam.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's apparent to anybody, even people who don't understand football. You know, I think even they understand, okay, Tony Romo has for two drives now basically called out everything that's going to happen when these teams are on offense. Obviously, he knows what he's talking about, but, you know, you said it. He doesn't do it in a way that, like, I know a lot more about football than you do, and that's why I'm in the booth and you're sitting at home. He's having a blast. You know, he's having fun. He's talking to his buddies, you know, and I mean, I was impressed with that. You know, he's dishing out. I mean, the stuff he's talking about is there are 30 people in the world that can dissect a game like Tony Romo. And he is doing it play after play after play, and he's having a blast. And he sounds like he's having fun. He's drinking a beer with Jim Nance in the booth. And that's what he sounds like. And, you know, in 2 weeks when you know, 100 million people however many are going to watch the Super Bowl, I think Tony Romo might change the way that color commentary is viewed by the masses. I mean, that's how impressive he is. That's how much knowledge he has, and that's how fun he is to listen to. A lot of people, they don't care, but Tony Romo is different. And you said it. I didn't grow up with Madden. You know, I knew John Madden by playing Madden football and listening to him do broadcasts. You know, I didn't know the younger Madden, but from everybody that I talked to who did, that they Tony Romo reminds them of John Madden.
Oh.
That infectious energy with a knowledge of football that is just so immense, and he is relatable when he talks, and I think that's the biggest thing that people look for.
I got it. Madden was the best, you know, because he would be in the, first of all, the analysis that you got from him was really spectacular, but he'd be in there and he would be saying, "Why do I, Jim? Why, Cam? Watch this guy! Boom! Just smacked him in the mouth." And, you know, that's what you'd get, and you got this very blue collar, South Side Chicago kind of guy. He's not from there, but that's what you got. You can relate to that term after being there. That's what you got. But what you got is you got solid, in the weeds, nuance and depth, and you didn't get it colored. He didn't try to make anything pretty. His analysis would hit you in the mouth, and you either loved him or you hated him, and most people loved him. I want to throw one more thing at you before we pause. This was something that I ran a little earlier. This was from my Thursday show, and if you saw this already, I know that the Patriots ran 93 offensive plays to Kansas City's 47. This is what I want to ask you a question about. This is what I said on Thursday of last week. If the temperature is low, and Belichick, him and his staff aren't going to miss anything. If they have to run the ball 30 or 40 or 50 straight times, if they believe that establishing a ground game is going to be the way to beat the Chiefs and keep Mahomes and that offense, that explosive offense off the field, you and I both know Belichick will do that. And he ran the ball 48 times in the game, and I mean, as stats go, I thought the time of possession was significant. 43-59 to 20-53. Clearly, it was Bill Belichick, Cam, saying this Kansas City team is incredibly talented on offense. They're wildly explosive. Patrick Mahomes is a superstar on the horizon. We can't let him have the ball.
Yeah, it's going to be the same game plan in the Super Bowl. You know, you don't want that Rams offense to have the ball. You want that defense to stay on the field. I think it's going to be a little more difficult to run the ball on the Rams defense than it was the Chiefs defense. And I think the mismatches in the secondary are going to be even bigger than they were against the Chiefs. But, you know, Bill Belichick understands, like I said, what a team's strengths are, and he's going to take that strength away. He's going to make you play to number two. And if number two beats him, you know, so be it. You're getting paid just like we're getting paid. But the game plan of, you know, and it's not necessarily slow the game down. It's let's put drives together to keep that Chiefs offense off the field. We're not trying to limit our possession. We're trying to keep them off the field. We want to still attack. We want to be aggressive. But we're going to do it in a way that ensures we hold the ball longer than they hold the ball. And, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is – you don't want that dude with the ball. You know, Jared Goff is not nearly as dynamic as Patrick. Patrick Mahomes is scary as a quarterback, because he can pop one at any moment. He can get pressured and get out and still launch one. He's a scary, scary quarterback. But he's going to try to do the same thing to the Rams. And, you know, I honestly do love a Belichick defense in the playoffs. They are mugging people every snap because, hey, they're not going to call pass interference every play, so we're going to get away with as much as we can until they do. And you saw that yesterday. You saw Tyreek Hill smacked around. You saw Travis Kelce smacked around. He is going to hammer these Rams receivers. If Todd Gurley doesn't show up like he didn't show up yesterday, it's going to be a long day for that Rams offense.
My mom's a big Eagles fan, and she always gets upset about this or that. I don't like this player or that player, and I always tell her, Mom, listen, they're going to do, as you just said it, Cam, they're going to do as much as they can until something starts getting called, and then they're going to pull back just a little bit. One more segment with Cam Worrell coming up. Yeah, we're going to talk about the coin toss. We're going to talk about overtime coin toss, and we're going to talk a little bit about how the end of that game played out for the Chiefs and the Patriots. One more segment with Cam Worrell coming up. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
Talking with Cam Worrell. A few more minutes. Close this hour. Of course, next week we'll get a full Super Bowl preview from Mr. Worrell. Cam, I've been saying it for years. When we get to this time of year, and really when it comes up during the regular season, I said it to begin the show today, and I'm going to throw it to you. I don't think I've ever asked you about it. I think the way the NFL does overtime is ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous. The example, the parallel that I used is it's a baseball game going into extra innings. Let's say that the Dodgers are playing in San Francisco. Dodgers come up top of the 10th. First guy up hits a home run. Game over. That Giants don't bat. That's the game. And I think that at a minimum, the NFL should want to give both teams a chance to win the game, and then just let it be sudden death after that. If they need to have other rules in play, if a team scores 9 points, you know, they get up 9 or what have you, then they get the win. I don't know, but this coin toss to determine a team potentially that goes to the Super Bowl, I think is a horrible idea, and I don't buy the counter argument that, the other team had the Chiefs. They had plenty of opportunities to win the game earlier in the game. That's not that's moot because it's a new game. If you get to overtime, it's a new game. Give each team the chance to do their thing.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, the Chiefs had a chance to win that game. They had a chance to get off the field and make the Patriots punt and get a possession in overtime. But when you have a coin toss determined possession and the team that wins that coin toss and gets possession could win the game without the other team touching the football, I don't think that, you know, it's fair to the team that played 60 minutes, tied the other team, and the team that happens to win that coin toss gets an opportunity that the other team may never get. You know, the Chiefs never had an opportunity to possess that football. Obviously they had chances to make plays. We all understand that. You know, I know the argument is, hey, the Patriots go down and score a touchdown. Well, now the Chiefs are playing 4-down football. You know they have to score a touchdown or they lose, so it's unfair. Cool, but still, you have to give the other team a chance to touch the football. You know, you go to the college rules or just play it like a game. Play,
right.
Hey, in the playoffs, we're playing 15 minutes, all right? We're playing an extra quarter in the playoffs, and if one team wins, cool. If not, then, hey, the next team that scores, game over after that. But there needs to be something that, you know, equates to each team. And, you know, there was like a half step. Oh, if you kick a field goal, then the other team gets the ball. That's not sudden death. But if you score a touchdown, it's game over. It's ridiculous. Let both teams possess the football in overtime. If both teams touch it, hey, then it's sudden death after that. If it's 7-7, each team scores, then it's sudden death after that. But to not even get a chance to touch the football is, you know, I just think you're determining a lot I don't know what the numbers are. I promise you, though, that the metrics say the team that wins the toss in overtime wins a large percentage of those games compared to the team that does not. To determine the chance to go to a Super Bowl by a coin flip, that's tough to take if you're the Chiefs.
It is, and it's such an easy adjustment to the rule for the National Football League as opposed to just sticking to it because, well, that's how we came up with it. There's a lot of outcry. I mean, from the football to fans to celebrities all over the place. Folks, he is Cam Morrell. You see why we like to have him on here for an hour because he gives you great stuff. He'll be back with us on Monday to really break down the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 53. Cam, great work as always, my friend. Have a terrific week. We'll talk next week.
You as well, CG. Appreciate you as always.
All right, my man. Coming up, hour number three, top five at five, winners and losers, and the NFL Therapy Edition at 5:35. This is the CGP.
The Top 5 at 5 is sponsored by the Law Office of Josh Lazar and Associates. And now, from Fresno, California, to the furthest reaches of the galaxy, here are your Top 5 at 5 sports talkers of the day.
Top 5 at 5 to begin your week. 2 weeks before we get to the Super Bowl. I'm still a fan of the idea of, and it'll never happen, it happened that one year, was it, I don't remember, was it 9-11, not 9-11, we had some sort of significant event going on. Was it Reagan getting shot? I can't remember what it was, but we had one year where there was only 1 week between the conference championships and the Super Bowl, and I don't remember why that is. One of you knows, and if you can remember, forgive me for forgetting, CGP at 940ESPNFresno.com. Shoot me an email to remind me because it's gonna bug me. But top five at five, some of these stories you've heard. I think the majority of these you might not have heard.
Number one.
This one definitely. Cam and I were just talking about it. Tony D and I were talking about it a little bit earlier. NFL has said that they will discuss this offseason whether to make pass interference penalties reviewable. It's been a big topic of discussion over the past few years within the NFL's competition committee. You've had Sean Payton on that committee. You've had Bill Belichick on that committee. They have, those two in particular, are longtime advocates to expand replay. Do you think Sean Payton is going to be going to those meetings this offseason with an urgency that maybe he hasn't had before? Bill Belichick, everybody, as soon as he speaks, everybody in the room perks up. So you know that they'll listen to him as well. What you should know, if you didn't know this already, is that in the past there hasn't really been that much support in the area of judgment calls. The ability for a replay booth to turn over what amounts to a judgment call. But I think maybe what it took to spur this into a different area was what we saw happen yesterday. Because this wasn't a judgment call. This was something that was so obvious, so clearly obvious, defensive pass interference, that on Nickell Robey-Coleman going up against Tommy Lee Lewis, you have to be able to review that and reverse it. After the game, head coach Sean Payton, of course, he said that Alberto Riveron, who is the NFL's head of officials, said to him that the league blew the call. Referees blew the call. According to sources, inside the NFL offices, the rule change is going to be discussed at length, along with some of the other rules, Saints owner that are going to get discussed as well. Gail Benson, of course, the widow of longtime Saints owner Tom Benson, said that she has also been in contact with the league. This was her statement that she put out. No team should ever be denied the opportunity to reach the title game or simply win a game based on the actions or inactions of those charged with creating a fair and equitable playing field. As is clear to all who watch the game, it is undeniable that our team and fans were unfairly deprived of that opportunity yesterday. I've been in touch with the NFL regarding yesterday's events and will aggressively pursue changes in NFL policies to ensure no team and fan base is ever put in a similar position. Again, it's a disservice. Just another sentence here. It's a disservice to our coaches, players, employees, and most importantly, the fans who make our game possible. The NFL must always commit to providing the most basic of expectations, fairness, and integrity. Look, you've got a multi-billion dollar league with technology to match. You've got what? 8, 10, 12, 14? You've got probably, what, 8 cameras for a conference championship game? I'm guessing you have somewhere between 6 and 8 manned cameras. You have other stationary cameras that are controlled in terms of zooming in or what have you from the control room. But I'm guessing you have somewhere between 14, 16 cameras. The angles and views that you have available, the people who study this stuff, who understand where cameras need to be, you have all of the technology available to you. And for a league that will go as far as fine a guy because his socks aren't up to the proper length or because he's wearing a shield on his helmet that doesn't comply with league rules, or if he's wearing some sort of wristband with a message or a headband with a message, or if a helmet comes off, you get the idea. A league that is so that scrutinizes every little detail, and nothing wrong with that, that you don't give the league, your own league, the ability to review a call like that, that in that singular moment likely took away a trip to the Super Bowl for the New Orleans Saints. You've got to be able to make the change. You've got to be able to do something. There shouldn't even be discussion, because every one of those owners that will be in those meetings, every one of those individuals who's on the competition committee understands that the way the call went against the non-call, excuse me, that went against the Saints, that could very easily be their team in a regular season game or in a playoff game or in the Super Bowl next year.
Number 2.
On a much lighter note, but an appreciated note, you'll recall last year that we told you about Atlanta Falcons president and CEO Rich McKay. And he said he was changing the policy at his stadium, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, that you have 12 different food and beverage items that were not going to be priced ridiculously. You have $5 cheeseburgers, $3 nachos, $2 refillable soft drinks, hot dogs, lower prices than any other major professional American sports venue. Of course, the Falcons play there. You have the SEC championship game there. You have one of the New Year's Six bowl games. The Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl is there. And those items are without tax for faster, more fluid concession stand transactions. Well, of course, the Super Bowl between the Rams and the Patriots is going to be there in 2 weeks. And he came out and said, let's be clear, those prices on that special menu, which include a $2 hot dogs, I should have put the price on it, and some beers that are $5, not $8 or $9 or $10, those aren't changing. There's going to be 75,000 people in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and those prices are going to stay the same. For comparison, taking a look at last year's Super Bowl at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, you had a hot dog, which is, what, $6 hot dogs. You had beers that were about $1.10, $1.20 more. You had prices across the board that were higher. Interesting what Rich McKay had to say. He said, we said this in our negotiations with the SEC, the College Football Championship, the Super Bowl, and the Final Four. So there's obviously more events. What we basically said is every customer that comes through that door is our customer. So we want to treat all those customers the same and give them the same experience in food and beverage. An interesting sidebar to this is that when the SEC, Southeastern Conference, negotiated their new deal with them, Michael Slive, commissioner, he's sadly the late commissioner now, but when he was in those negotiations with CEO Rich McKay, he came to the table saying, we have a series of items on your concessions, your concession stand list, that we don't want to be priced excessively. And what was interesting is that both of them came to the meeting with the same idea, with the same notes. It's called Fan First Menu Pricing. Stadium was $1.5 billion, and there's plenty of things in there that you can spend a lot of money on, from fan merchandise, you know, whether it's Falcon stuff, or it's going to be Super Bowl stuff, Final Four stuff, SEC stuff, whatever event's going on in there, not to mention high-end food items. I don't know how you are when you go to a game. If you're you know, chowing down at concession stands, I tend to, maybe I'll get a hot dog, maybe I'll get something at the beginning of the game, and that'll be about it, or maybe some peanuts. But I'm definitely not looking at stadiums to spend, you know, $8 or $10 on a bratwurst, $12 on an alcoholic beverage, you know, where you end up paying as much as your ticket price. So good for them. I'm glad to see that Mercedes-Benz Stadium is going to keep that price down. Of course, the 75,000 people, how many of those people are really going to be fans? I mean, with 75,000 seats, each team is going to get, I'm going to guess 20,000 tickets. And those tickets will go probably on some sort of lottery basis to the season ticket holders. I'm sure the people who are paying the most are going to have an immediate opportunity to get tickets. But the Super Bowl tickets are a fortune. But usually, close to half the stadium are just sponsors, VIPs, people with no rooting interest in the game. And that's why the environment of a Super Bowl game is rarely anything approaching the conference championship games or any other game, which is fine. It's, you know, it is what it is. Would you want to go to, would you go to a Super Bowl? Yeah. I had a chance to go to one, and then some stuff got in the way and couldn't do it. I think I'd want to go to one.
Number three.
Always love how winning cures all ills. Tom Brady saying now that what's everybody talking about? Me and Coach Belichick have always gotten along great. We've worked together for 19 years, so we've had the same goals in mind for 19 years. He's been just great. Been a great mentor in my life, great coach. He's taught me more than anyone could ever about the game of football. I've always just loved playing here and playing for him. He's the greatest coach of all time. We've just had some incredible moments together. Listen, I don't doubt that. I mean, they will go down in history. You can't mention one without the other. You can't mention forever. Patriots Super Bowls, the 9 Super Bowls, the 5 wins, maybe 6 in 2 weeks. You can't mention them without talking about Tom Brady, quickly followed by Bill Belichick, or the other way around. You just can't. But I'm not buying that they've always gotten along great. In families, there are arguments and disagreements, in actual families. In sports families, there are arguments, there are disagreements, there are hard feelings, there are rough things said to each other. This idea that, you know, we've always gotten along great. I think some of the reports that we read with the Jimmy Garoppolo deal from several very, very reliable writers at ESPN.com, I'm just, something was going on there. Somewhere in there was a power play. I don't know if it was Brady and Kraft, if it was Brady and Belichick, if it was Belichick and Kraft. I don't know what the deal was, but somewhere in the mix there, this whole idea that they're all sitting around the campfire for 19 years, I'm just not buying that. That's just not reality. And it's neither here nor there. I mean, it's the way it is. You know, they both need each other. It's like USC and UCLA. For all the things that they go back and forth about, from academics to athletics, both schools academically and athletically are better because of the other being 11 miles away. And that's Brady and Belichick. Talked with a friend earlier today saying, if Brady wins the Super Bowl, is he going to retire? My guess is no. I believe, given this story that Brady's coming out and saying, we've always been such great friends, and this is kind of where this is going, I can't, if Belichick were to decide that he doesn't want to come back to the Patriots, if he just said, you know what, I've had a great run, all these Super Bowls have been wonderful, what a great 20 years, 19 years, whatever, of my life being here in New England at Foxborough, working for Robert Kraft, and having my best buddy, he's practically a son to me, Tom Brady, being my quarterback, I'm done. I need to just kick back, relax, and maybe just sit at home with a beer and watch my performance in post-game pressers just to see how little that I said. Do you think Tom Brady's coming back? Brady wants to play more. He wants to play at least 45. I don't know that he's going to get there, but I have a hard time seeing Tom Brady playing another year without Bill Belichick. Wouldn't surprise me if the two of them said, do we do one more? Can we win one more of these things? I don't know that I see Brady coming back without Belichick. Would Brady want to go to a different team? I don't think so. It's going to be interesting.
Number four.
Well, I wondered if we were ever going to see a story like this come out, and I started to think, no, not going to happen. And then, sure enough, here it is. Going to the Philadelphia Eagles, and you have players coming out now like Zach Ertz, like Lane Johnson, like Fletcher Cox, defending Carson Wentz against, there's a publication in Philadelphia called the Philly Voice. And pretty popular publication there. It's not the Philadelphia Daily News. It's not the Philadelphia Inquirer, but it's a pretty popular publication there. And a report was published in the Philly Voice with multiple team sources, though anonymous ones, referring to Carson Wentz as, and I'm quoting now, selfish, uncompromising, and egotistical. Now, I've never played with Carson Wentz. It's not like Carson Wentz and I, when I was in Fargo, were going out and having coffee. But I've had Carson Wentz one-on-one. I covered him and certainly was around him and North Dakota State enough to know that those words would be, if not the three last words, three of the last five or ten words I would ever attach with Carson Wentz. Just would never attach selfish, uncompromising, and egotistical. That's just nonsense. But Philly Voice is saying more than a half dozen Eagles players coming out saying that's the deal. And this is what I was wondering, was this ever going to come out? Something like this, where you have guys on the Eagles that are quietly, because it's not the popular position on the Eagles, that are quietly saying, listen, yeah, that's great about Carson, but the guy who's led this team when it counted most, won us a Super Bowl, and won us a playoff game in Chicago, and nearly won us another one in New Orleans, that guy's not named Carson Wentz, that guy's named Nick Foles. And this kind of a report doesn't come out. Report goes on to say, the published report comes out and says that Wentz plays favorites. He fails to take accountability for his errors. But Nick Foles was described by these unnamed Eagles players as, quote, universally loved. Well, then you had Zach Ertz come out and Fletcher Cox and Lane Johnson. Lane Johnson said, whoever wrote that article needs to check their sources. Carson has been and is our leader and our quarterback. Y'all know where to find me if you have any issues. Hashtag fly Eagles fly. Zach Ertz, don't believe everything you read. Carson has been nothing but a great person, great in uppercase every time here, great teammate and great leader since day one. Our locker room stands behind him all the way. We can't wait to get back to work and be the best team we can be in 2019. Again, hashtag fly Eagles fly. And Fletcher Cox. He says, reading through the Carson Wentz thing, and as a leader on this team, none of that is true. Carson is a great teammate and a great player. We're all behind him 100%. He's our guy, and we'll come back and prove the world wrong. If you got a problem, feel free to at me. I'll respond. I don't know what's true, what isn't. But all I know is the Carson Wentz that I knew from a distance, the guy who I interviewed on several occasions, the program that I was around when he was there before he got to Philadelphia, he was none of those things. And the people in media, a couple who I know very well, who know him really well, completely disagree with that. So I'm not sure what's motivating those comments, but I would be very, very surprised if any of that is true.
Number five.
Last thing, your current Top 25 is out. Associated Press Top 25 for college basketball. Tennessee is now number one. First time Tennessee has gone to number one since the 2007-2008 season. They received 48 first place votes. Duke, they beat Virginia, but they lost earlier in the week to Syracuse. They dropped to number two, 11 first place votes. Virginia, they lost at Duke, sitting at number three with 3 first place votes. Rounding out your top 10. Again, we'll start with the top. Tennessee, number one. Duke, number two. Virginia, 3. Gonzaga, 4. Michigan, 5. Michigan lost to Wisconsin over the weekend. A couple first place votes, and sitting at number 6, Michigan State. Out of the Mountain West, Nevada at number 7. I watched their game against Air Force the other night. They were terrible. They won, but it took they were behind or even for 30 of the 40 minutes, and the game was in Reno. I don't believe that's a Final Four team. Not this year. I don't. They're a tough out. They'll be difficult. They're a team. Paul Loeffler and I were talking a little bit earlier. They're a team that's built for the tournament, but I'm not. I just don't think that they're going to make the run they did last year. Kentucky is number 8. Kansas 9, and at number 10, Virginia Tech, and North Carolina, which is number 11. They are going at it in Chapel Hill right now. Coming up, winners and losers, your top 5 at 5.
It's time for winners.
Yeah, baby.
And the losers.
What the hell's going on out here?
How did CG do this weekend? He's shown himself to be an elite selection mind. But he's also displayed an uncanny ability to fail miserably. Let's find out.
Yes, indeed. We always have both every week. We try to be fair. Right, we still have one game for Tony Landry and myself. Tony Landry is the person who does this with me. Chris Tony's on Tuesdays, and he also is on Fridays for Friday Picks. Tony and I right now, through many, many, many weeks of a split time of college games and NFL games, I am sitting right now at 97-50-2. Tony is at 94-53-2. He has picked up. Three games on me in the last 2 weeks. So it's been a good run for him, because I had picked up two games on him the previous 2 weeks. But right now, we have one game tonight. We have the Golden State Lakers game tonight from Los Angeles. But he did well. I'm just looking at how we did. Patriots Chiefs, we split on that one. We also split on Rams Saints, and then he won the Duke game and I didn't win with that one. And with that, my loser for the week would be Duke and Virginia. Virginia at Duke. This is going to be a great game in Cameron Indoor. Duke has some remarkable talent on this basketball team. Virginia's defense is as good as anything you're going to see in all of college basketball. Duke is a tough place to go into, but if there's anybody that can go in there and win this game, besides their tremendous defense, nobody's really scoring against Virginia. I think Virginia's got enough offense to go in there and beat them. I'm not going to play the card that says if Syracuse can go in and win, so can Virginia. But Virginia is a team that has won there before, and I think they go into Duke, and I think they win. Yeah, I was off. Yeah, it was a good game, but I really never had the idea. If you watch the game, you know what I'm talking about. Never really had the idea that Virginia was going to win that game. Duke played exceptionally well. A couple of guys banged up. They just brought it. They just looked really good. I'm not even sure Virginia wins the rematch when they go and play in Charlottesville. Well, on the other side of the ledger would be my winner for the week, and this was Rams and Saints. The Rams finished the season as the NFL's third best rushing team. Of course, they ran wild on the Cowboys, 273 yards. And they also have a kicker who has attempted 6 field goals over 50 yards, second most in the NFL. I always mess up his pronunciation, Greg Zuerlein or Zuerlein. I want to say it's Zuerlein.
Greg Zuerlein, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that...
Like the steak, kind of.
Yeah, or maybe Steve Berline. I think that that's something that could end up being a factor in this game. I'm going with the Rams in this game. I think that one addition that the Rams have this time around that they didn't have going up against Drew Brees the first time is Aqib Talib. And I think that even though this is a guy who is not an interception machine, I think this is a guy that's going to at least create some problems for Brees and that passing attack. I really like the fact that I think the Rams very easily could have won that game earlier this year. I think the Rams and the Saints are both a little better than they were when they met in Week 9. I just don't think this team is going to beat the Rams for a third time, preseason, regular season, playoffs. I don't think it's happening. Well, I got a few of those things right. It was nice to be on the upper ledger on that one. Zuerlein obviously did become a big factor when you consider that he kicked the field goal to put him into overtime, and then he kicked the 57-yarder that would have been good easily from another 10 yards, if not a little bit more. I mean, he had room to spare on that kick. It wasn't a barely over the crossbar. Zuerlein did become a big factor, and even though Aqib Talib didn't make the play of the game, or at least to get them into overtime, there was the tip ball and there was an interception. Drew Brees did not have the kind of day that you would expect him to have playing at home in a place that he doesn't lose. He had not lost in the playoffs in the Superdome. He was 26 for 40, 249, a couple of TDs, but it was the one interception. Again, it was tipped. Nevertheless, the one interception that got the game ultimately, got the game into the hands of the Rams. Stats can be deceiving, but that was, I just didn't think that the Rams would lose three straight times. I realize that we're stretching it when you're talking about preseason, but you've got basically the same guys who are out there playing, they were on that trip. And then they lost in the regular season in that wild game that was down in New Orleans, a tremendous football game. But what a great game that was. So how many? Well, I've got something coming up in the next segment. I've got something coming. We're doing NFL therapy. If you want to give me a call, if you have a thought about either of these games that we watched yesterday, if you have a gripe, a complaint about the game, the officiating, the National Football League in general, Tom Brady, Sean McVay, anything that's on your mind that you want to share with us, you can certainly do that. 844-940-3776. It's NFL therapy. I've got one more piece of this whole puzzle regarding the Saints-Rams game, and if you haven't heard it, it involves a little-known rule. I'm going to read the rule to you. That's next on NFL Therapy. This is the CGP.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
NFL Therapy coming your way. You have something on your mind about yesterday's games, rule changes, coin tosses, Tom Brady, you name it, we're here to help. 844-940-3776. Also, I want to remind you, tomorrow, Save Mart Center, 8 p.m. tip-off, big game, San Diego State's in town. Game's going to be nationwide on ESPNU, and Paul Leffler, Coach Q, will be on the call. I'll be there, looking forward to that. That's no reason for you to come that I'm going to be there. I'm looking forward to seeing how this team bounces back after their last home game, which was a loss to Nevada. They went up into Boise State, beat Boise State by 10. It was just a nice comeback win. Always nice to beat Boise State in anything. It doesn't really make a difference what it is. But again, we did Bulldogs therapy throughout the year. We'll do NFL therapy now. If you have something on your mind, you can certainly weigh in. We'll happily take your call. 844-940-3776. I told you that I had something else of lingering around here, and it is Rule 17, Section 2, Article 1. And if you're wondering what that is, well, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was either. And it's a legit rule. It's been on the books for a while, and it is a rule that has been tweeted by rule. In other words, by writing Rule 17, Section 2, Article 1 by quite a few of the Saints players saying, ball's in your court, Commissioner. Now, I think it's going to happen, but who knew this rule was on the book? And here it is. Rule 17, Section 2, Article 1. The Commissioner has the sole authority to investigate and take appropriate disciplinary and or corrective measures if any club action, non-participant interference, or calamity occurs in an NFL game which the commissioner deems so extraordinarily unfair or outside the accepted tactics encountered in professional football that such action has a major effect on the result of the game. I want you to think about that for a second. We're talking about the Nickell Robey Coleman play going, you know, that he just, where he just bulldozed receiver Tommy Lee Lewis. And, you know, the question is, was that an extraordinarily unfair moment? Did that essentially have a, per rule, have a major effect on the result of the game? And would Roger Goodell, would any commissioner step in using Rule 17, Section 2, Article 1 to, well, he has two courses of action, which I'll get to in a second. I want to sneak in a phone call here. We'll say hello to Chuck. Chuck, welcome. You're on the CGP on 940 ESPN. Good evening to you, my friend.
Good evening to you. Maybe. Well, there is no maybe. In all the years that I've been watching football, and I've been watching them longer than you have, it's the most blatant non-call of pass interference that I've ever seen. But there was a memo that went out Saturday and went to a very select few. And the memo stated that unless a defensive back is using a baseball bat on a receiver, there will be no pass interference calls.
Well, at least they followed the memo, didn't they?
Oh, yes, it would appear so. You know, I think it puts the credibility of the people that managed the NFL right up front and on the table, because here's the other thing that bothers me about all this. Everybody is so invested in the NFL, and the people that are not are the referees, because they're only working part-time. Everybody else, and that stadium people, the people who are selling beer and selling burgers, working for the various teams and the stadiums, for most of those people, it's a full-time job. And who is more important in a game as to how it's going to turn out than the referees?
Well, Chuck, I will stay with me here. I agree with you right down the line. And I think when we talk about the credibility of the National Football League, and I made this point earlier, and in the event that you weren't listening, I'll certainly pass it your way, because I think it speaks to what you said. And that is that this is a league that, as you well know, will fine a player if his socks aren't pulled up high enough, if he's not wearing the right cleats, if the colors of the bottom of their shoes are not right, if the color of the visor, the helmet shield, is not correct. Players, they can get penalties, they can get fined, they can get both. It's a remarkable bit of scrutiny that the National Football League puts its players under, and for a league that purports to care about the little things, to care about the small details, the finite details that make their league, as they like to say, the greatest professional sports league or sports league in the world, for a billion-dollar or a multi-billion-dollar sports league that has equal technology worth billions at their disposal, you would think that they would figure out something as simple or as simplistic as getting referees to understand their own rule book, getting referees to make sure to know how to grab the flag in their pocket when a play is clearly wrong. One of the gripes with the National Hockey League for as long as I've been watching it is that the referees in playoff games, as you get deeper into a game and as you get deeper into the playoffs, that the referees call fewer and fewer penalties. They let the players decide it. And I've always had a problem with that, and hockey has been my favorite sport, professional sport, forever. I have a problem with that, Chuck, because the rules are there to be called. If a guy is hooking a guy in the first period of Game 7, it should be a hooking penalty in the third period of Game 7 of the Stanley Cup. So to your point, I do think that the credibility of the league is on the line, especially for a league that is so image conscious? Do we need to go back to last year and all the things that were in play? For a league that is so image conscious, you would think that something like this, you know, when they come out and they say, yeah, we're going to look at this in the off season, it should be with the idea of, we're going to change this, we're going to make it reviewable, then we'll add the, you know, we'll add the spices to how we're going to write the rule after that.
I'd add one more thing to your list of image for the NFL and what they're so conscious of. There was commentary yesterday of a woman who was a referee for the first time in an AFC or an NFC championship game. She got more attention than the non-call got from the people who were commenting on that game. So, you know, this is not the time for the NFL to go find a lovely part of the beach and stick their head in the sand. This is something, as the owner of the Saints said, is this is something that you're going to have to deal with, which could be a whole different bag of snakes for this reason.
Yep.
Baseball.
Go ahead.
Baseball has been taken to the woodshed because of all the time that it takes for the pitcher to throw the ball and all these other things. The more reviews that you have in a professional football game, the longer it's going to be. And then the question is, then what are they going to do?
Let me ask you one more question as long as I've got you. I put this question to Tony D earlier. I put the question to Cam Worrell. I've heard from people in emails starting probably an hour or so after the game yesterday, after the Patriots-Chiefs game. It's quite a few emails. What do you think about NFL overtime? Are you happy with the coin toss procedure that one team, essentially one team can win the coin toss, win the game, and the other team's offense never sees the ball?
You made a statement earlier in your program about overtime should be a whole quarter. So you negate the idea of who wins a game toss, because the way it's set up now, the team that wins a toss wins the game more than 70% of the time. You play overtime as a fifth quarter, and then that negates, and it, whatever the score is at the end of that quarter, unless it's still tied, that's the winner. But this idea of, you know, it's first up, and if you score the touchdown, you win the game, I think that you're doing the disservice, and there's a long list as to who you're doing that to.
Chuck, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it. 844-940-3776. Yeah, that was one of the ideas that I put out there. If the NFL is going to stay with this idea of wanting to have a bit of sudden death in it, then whoever wins the coin toss, I don't care if they get a field goal. I don't care if they get a touchdown. The touchdown is the game ender right now. You have to kick off and allow the other team a chance at the ball. You simply have to do that. It's ridiculous. It's in there because they want to see if they can keep games speeding up a little bit. If once it goes to overtime, you're talking, you know, longer with commercials and maybe more timeouts and so on. Forget that. You've got to level the playing field. That's one way to do it. The other is what Chuck was referencing when I made this other point earlier in the show. Go ahead and commit. Commit to an entire quarter, whereas Chuck just said, the coin toss becomes moot. It doesn't matter anymore who wins the coin toss, except for the fact that team might get out to a lead, but you play 15 minutes. You play a 15-minute quarter. Or maybe you keep it the way regular season is. You have a 10-minute quarter. I like the idea of doing a full quarter. And I think if you ask every single player on the Chiefs, they're going to say they love that idea. Patriots today will say, the rule is fine the way it is. But that rule can very easily work against you next year or the year after or sooner or later. And it only needs to happen one time. And the only way that we make rules better in any professional sport or in college athletics or in any job that you work at, the only time that we are able to make something a little bit better is when something goes wrong. And we try, right? We try to anticipate the things that might go wrong in business, in sports, and so on. But there's going to be things that happen that we're not expecting. Sometimes it's just a new situation that presents itself. Sometimes it's an unintended consequence from something else that was already in play. But that's how rules are rewritten or new rules are created. Hopefully for the better, sometimes not for the better. And I think with what we saw play out yesterday, the two things that have to happen, you know, last offseason was spent on the catch rule and on trying to make football safer in terms of kicks, right? On kickoffs, on punts, and so on what to do in those situations. Fair enough. We want to see clarity. We want clarity with the catch rule. And that got a little bit better this year, but there were also times that it wasn't better. And the punt, the kickoff, that's going to be an ongoing process. But something like whether or not pass interference, defensive pass interference, any way you're looking at it, should be reviewable, that's a no-brainer. That has to be in play, doesn't it? And the coin toss. A coin toss should not potentially lead to a team having zero chance to get to the Super Bowl. They have worked too hard, played too many games to have that taken away from them simply because they called heads and it was tails or vice versa. This is easy stuff. This is easy stuff to get figured out. One more thing is next. This is the CGP.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
One more thing for you today might include a second thing, maybe even a third, depends on how much time we have here. We have about 4.5 minutes. I was sent a tweet earlier in the program from Central Valley Raider, who asked me and several other folks, one an NFL writer and a couple of other folks, the following. As the world waits for the Rams-Pats Super Bowl, Raider Nation waits with concern on where we will call home next season. Per commish, wanted to know before the Super Bowl for scheduling purposes, what do you think? And as I said, I was one of the people who was asked this, and I said the following. I think that Mark Davis and the city of Oakland need to put their tremendous fan base, their loyal fan base, who gets one more year of the Oakland Raiders in the Bay Area. It should be in the Bay Area. They need to resolve their differences. There was a lawsuit in play. You know, angry words going through the news, going through print media at each other. Resolve your differences. I believe the mayor is Libby Schaff up in Oakland. Figure it out. You've got 1 year to live with each other again. Thank you, Russ. It's Libby Schaff. You've got 1 year left before the team goes to much, much greener pastures in a desert community with their new gorgeous stadium in Las Vegas. Don't send the team, don't send them to Fresno. They're not going to send them here. You heard my interview with Derek Carr last week, and I know Derek would like it to be here for obvious reasons, but they're not coming here. Don't even entertain the idea of sending them to Glendale and that big stadium there. Phoenix Stadium. That's ridiculous. Somebody threw out San Diego. Now, that's ridiculous, too. They're the Oakland Raiders. For one more year, they should be the Oakland Raiders for one more year. I don't know. Beyond the lawsuit and the money that was in play with the lease and what have you, and Mark Davis feeling like he's being wrong, and the city of Oakland feeling like they're trying to take advantage of them, I don't know who is right and wrong, or who is a little more right and a little more wrong than the other, and I don't care. For all the people involved in stadium deals, dealing with teams, and whether to get a new stadium and so on, and with the at times very inglorious history of the Raiders when it comes to serving their fans best, Mark Davis, City of Oakland, for once, put your fans first. Don't worry about, Mark, don't worry about scoring points with Mayor Schaff. Mayor Schaff, stop trying to basically jab, you know, poke the bear. Because, you know, the Bear's leaving. Mark, you don't have to deal with Mayor Schaff anymore. Can we both just get along, meaning the two of you? You just figure it out. Finally, I want to read you the comments of Maryville College, the head coach of Maryville College, talking about his girls, his women's basketball team, Darren Trevilian, saying the following. I told my kids I don't care about the score. This was a benefit game for a young lady who died in a car accident, former team member. It was wonderful. They were doing a benefit to raise money. I told my kids I don't care about the score. Let's go get a bunch of assists. Let's go get 30 assists. That's the only real statistical goal we had. Let's get 30 assists. That shows we're sharing it. Shows you how we're growing. Shows you their nature to be unselfish. They really are the unselfish bunch. But you still have to have somebody to put it on the other end. I can make passes all day, but somebody has to put the ball through the net. For them to be able to finish those plays, that's great. That all sounds great, doesn't it? And it was a wonderful benefit for the young lady, Brittany Johnson, who lost her life in a car accident. The final score in this game between Maryville College and Wesleyan College was 112-9. It was 64-2 at halftime, 92-6 going into the fourth quarter. Listen, great cause, great evening for a young lady who lost her life. But this coach is talking about, we don't care about this or that, we just care about assists. And they go out and they drop 112 on a team that was 0-16 going into the game. There's just something wrong with that picture. Sorry, there is. My thanks to our good friends, Tony D. and Cam Worrell. And my guy Russ doing his usual great job. Folks, we'll see you tomorrow. 21 hours. Until then, you're on your own.